Hello, my name is Tosh and I'm an alcoholic. And I have the privilege to introduce our speaker tonight, Karen with 4 years. And her advice to newcomer is there are three sides to the triangle: unity, recovery, and service. Do all three. And her home group is the Young People Big Book Study in Clovis. And welcome our speaker.
Hi, everyone. My name is Karen and I'm an alcoholic. I was telling Natasha how, like, I've been to this meeting before, and the introduction was, like, the whole story. And so she kept it really short. So thank you, Natasha. I always get a little bit nervous before I speak, which is weird because I literally do that for a living and don't get that nervous, and I don't know what that's about, but so it'll take me a minute. My sobriety date is June 6th of 2015. See, I even, like, thank you. My sponsor tells me that when you say your sobriety date, God takes over, so I always just make an effort to do that as soon as possible. It's worked so far. I have the honor to stand up here and give you a little bit of my experience, strength, and hope in these past 4.5 years. You know, it's just that. It's my experience. I am what I would call hardcore in this program. Self-evaluated hardcore. Self-labeled, whatever you want to call it. But, you know, like, I've done the softcore version. That sounds weird. But anyways, I have. And I got drunk again. Twice, you know? So, you know, I had two long periods of sobriety, 1 5 years and 1 6 years before this current sobriety date. And each time I did it half measures. And so I don't have the luxury of trying that again. Like I said in a meeting the other night, like, I know I can take a drink again, but I don't know if you'll ever see me again after that. Like, that's just how it is for me. I already, like, tested those waters, and I barely got back here. I'm honored that I have, like, one of my mentors sitting in the audience here tonight. He's not even from the area, and, like, you know, it just so happened he's down here for a while. Yeah, I consider you one of my mentors. You know, he's down here for a while, and it just so happens, like, I'm sharing. And, like, I think Bill scheduled me, like, 8 months ago. So it is, like, that's, you know, how my greater power works in my life. And then I have at least one sponsee, a grand sponsee, and a bunch of people I do service with here in the room tonight. And, like, that probably makes me even more nervous. Because, you know, I'm going to have to tell myself and get real, and they're going to be like, what? You're not perfect? I'm not. So I do a lot of service, and I'll just my first call out. At the last business meeting, which was on Sunday, I was quiet because I wanted to kill everyone. So, but that's growth for me. So I do a lot of service. One of the service commitments I have is on Tuffy Paw. I don't know if you guys have heard about Tuffy Paw. It stands for Tulare United Fresno Young People and Alcoholics Anonymous. It has been the most rewarding and the most frustrating and the like biggest spark in spiritual growth for me in the past 2 years. But I'll get to that later, and that's the business meeting I was talking about. You know, for the people who are celebrating milestones, especially the 1 year, now I'm going to call out Natasha, like, so good you got 1 year, now stay. You know, I heard someone say that the other day, because I think we make it, for me, like, when I had time before, I would, like, make it to that milestone thinking that when I made it there, I was going to have arrived, and then I never felt like I had arrived. And, you know, somehow I kept making it to several more milestones, but eventually that novelty wore off, you know, because I was missing the whole point, which was the 365 days in between. Living life every day for that day, you know, and I wasn't doing that, and I wasn't working, I wasn't basing my life on spiritual principles, and I wasn't helping others. And, like, when I said that thing about the three sides of the triangle, you know, there are three sides on the chips. It says recovery, unity, service. You work those three, and, like, you're going to be solid here. And if you read this book with a sponsor, you know, and you go through this book and you work these steps, it'll become apparent why you need to do those three. Recovery is the 12 steps, right? Work on yourself. Unity is the fellowship, the meetings. And service is working with others, and there's a variety of different ways to do that. That's my interpretation of that. You can feel free to call me out afterwards if you think I'm wrong. So a little bit about me. I got here when I was 18 years old. My condition before I got here is like not really that relevant, but I was sort of like everyone else that stands up here. I was completely discontent with who I was as a person. There was absolutely no reason why. Well, maybe some people have a lot more reason why than I did. I grew up in, you know, a non-alcoholic home that was fairly non-abusive, compared to a lot of stories I've heard. There was emotional abuse, and there was like the don't talk about your feelings, and like I had no skills to cope with life at all, but I wasn't beat on a daily basis. And, you know, like there was a lot of things that I didn't like about the environment I grew up in, but, you know, in comparison to a lot of other people who, you know, get sober and stay sober, like I had like a cakewalk, you know, a non-alcoholic home, and I wasn't getting beat up even on a regular basis. I was spanked, but that was acceptable at the time. And, you know, I got here, I was still just completely discontent with who I was as a person. And just to give you a little insight into how weird I was, I remember when I was like 11 or 12 sitting with a friend, or like looking, this is the memory at least, we were like looking at the sky, and I was like, isn't it so weird how like the world's so big and I'm so small, and you know, all I'll ever know is like me and my thoughts and who I am. And she just looked at me and was like, no, you're like, haven't you ever thought about that? And she was like, no. And it was then that I knew, like, I was different, you know. And it's cool because I have children now, and they said that to me, like, isn't it weird how the world's so big and we're so small? And I can say, yeah, like, it is weird. I've thought that before. You're not weird for thinking that, you know. And I mean, it wasn't my friend's responsibility to be weird, as weird as I am, but it's nice to like allow my children to like have those thoughts and like talk with them about that and tell them that like what they're thinking is like normal, you know, and like that's just like an, you know, it's an okay thing to think. And I think if I would have had that, we didn't talk to my parents, so if I would have had that, like maybe I would have turned out different, who knows, but whatever, that's just how it was. And I walked through life like a complete introvert, and I found alcohol and other substances, and it took me out of that introverted state, and I, you know, made it here really quickly. I got sober when I was 18. I was just about to turn 19, I believe, something like that. And I stayed sober for 5 years. And I had a child. I started going to school, and my life got like really good, you know. And it still wasn't like perfect. I mean, I was like in college as a single mom, couldn't like make ends meet. Fortunately, I had family that helped me, and like eventually I just stopped working the program. I worked a set of steps, you know. Back then it was in 1996 was my first sobriety date. I think it was like New Year's Day, because I drank the night before, which at that time I didn't think was my problem, which is another reason why I relapsed twice. But anyways, I'll get there. But I at least knew enough that like if I was going to claim sobriety, you know, it would have to be from all substances. And you know, back then it was like 18-year-olds in meetings were an anomaly. And if you went to an alcoholics meeting, an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, and you even said, and other substances, the old timers would get up and they would tell you to leave the meeting. In fact, it happened to me, you know? So just, I don't know. I'm grateful for the way Alcoholics Anonymous is sort of, even though we make those statements at the beginning, I haven't seen that happen in a while, which I'm thankful for. I personally try to be respectful, you know, because that's what I was taught as a baby newcomer here. And I think it's the right thing to do. But anyway, so, you know, there was a small group of us, and we did all kinds of crazy, you know, young people stuff, and we did a bunch of old-timer meetings and all that stuff, and I worked a set of steps. I had a sponsor, and that was it. Like, I was done, you know? Like, that's what we're supposed to do, work steps, be done. I went on with, you know, moved on with my life and continued to do all the unity side of things, right, but not the steps and not the service, not the recovery, not the service. And eventually, like, there came a day when, and there was no rhyme or reason, someone was like, I was at a birthday party, that they're like, do you want a beer? And I was like, yeah. And then I was, like, within 2 weeks going to look for other things. And I was off and running for 3 years. And I came crawling back to the rooms. And 3 years later, had, like, a mini spiritual experience where, you know, it was like I went to go drink alcohol. And I got there, and the person's like, do you want alcohol? And I was like, no, even though everything inside me was screaming yes. And I got, you know, and I just turned on the car and drove away and went to my mom and asked for help. And, like, that was one of my major spiritual experiences I've had in my life, because it was just, like, phenomenal, you know, that I could hear that voice and feel, like, that urge to say yes, like, I want a drink, and but still not do it. And it was power greater than me, you know, doing something that I couldn't do for myself. And so I got back in these rooms and I did the same thing again, and I was like, well, that's never going to happen again. You know, I learned my lesson. And I was, like, somewhere around 28 or something like that when I got sober again. And and it, the same thing happened again, you know. I got sober. I worked a set of steps. I did sponsor one person, at least, that I can recall. I'm old now, so my memory is like, But it's, I know I'm not that old, but it feels like that. So I'm a grandmother, so at least I have that when I say I'm old, right? And she just turned 4, like, on the 13th. So I'm, you know, yeah, I know. So, and, you know, I got involved with someone. I got pregnant. I got married. You know, I had 3 kids. So that's 4 total. And, you know, 6 years. My life got really big. I stopped doing everything this time. It was like, definitely the unity was the last thing to hang on. You know, I'd still hang out with the sober friends, but the recovery and the service dropped off first, and eventually the unity dropped off. And I remember he was in sobriety too, and he is in again. He has about 6 months more than me, because we both sort of relapsed around the same time. And you know, I remember the day, like, you know, I posted a picture on social media, and it was, like, in my kitchen, and there was a case of beer, you know, and one of my recovery friends was like, what's that case of beer doing in there? And I realized, like, nobody even knew. They had no clue, right? And it had been going on a while, and so then I stopped posting on social media. So you can always tell the people who are going, I feel like, because I did the same thing, the people who are going down that path with social media nowadays, you know, because you see their posts get progressively more and more angry. That was me. I was, like, doing the yelling posts all the time. Like, the world was always out to get me. Everything sucked, you know, and then, like, I started drinking and or other drinks, all of a sudden life was, like, pretty good again, because I had, like, a solution for that spiritual malady, you know, because what happens for me is, like, over time, my head just gets super dark. It just screams, and it yells, and it tells me, you know, that I'm a weird piece of whatever, and I'm trying to be good, because I think it's being recorded. I mean, I know it's being recorded. He told me it's being recorded. So, you know, and it's just, like, it's insanity, right? And I know you guys can all relate to the insanity. And so, you know, when I finally go to the bottle, then all of a sudden it's, like, the solution. And I stayed out for 6 years this time. So, like, you can do the math, you know. That's the progression that everyone talks about. And, like, I can tell you all these things, unless, you know, sometimes we just need to experience them ourselves. But if you can learn from my experience, then have at it, because it's brutal. And, You know, for a long time, I was a functioning alcoholic. I actually did quite well, you know, and I think that kept me out longer and probably led me to a harder bottom. I was a great job, all the kids in graduate school, doing fantastic in graduate school, you know, working full time. And I was married, so I had help. It's not like I did it all myself, but, you know, I was just like killing it. And then like the last year, so the last 9 months from about summer of 2014 until June of 2015 was just, a living hell. Let's just put it that way. And, you know, I could tell you about all the crazy things I did during that time, but since it's going on to the internet, I probably won't share that right here. But I reached a new level of incomprehensible demoralization, you know, and somebody explained that to me. And, like, we've probably all done, you've probably done way worse than what I've done. But to me, you know, like, I think it's really bad. But looking back on it, like, where my life is today, you know, and sometimes I have these, like, flashes of memories, and I'm just like, that's insane, you know? But, like, at that time, it was so normal, right? And that book talks about that. Like, we're so entrenched in the disease, we can't differentiate the truth from the false. You know, like, I didn't need to sell my body. I had money. I had a job, you know? But I did it, right? Because I was like, oh, but it wasn't like I was prostituting because it was like a high level, whatever, you know, like very expensive deals. And I was like, this is fun. I mean, this is insanity, and I'm not saying it to like be to glamorize it, but I was like, you know, I like sex, and you know, so why not get paid for it? You know? And it was like, but I'm not like, how do I say this? But I'm not like doing stuff in the back alley for $20, and it's like hundreds of dollars. So therefore, it's even more okay. You know what I mean? It's just like, I'm, yes. So I mean, I can't think of the word. I work a really like mentally exhausting job. So sometimes in the evenings, it's like my brain's like, and you're done for the day. But you know, The insanity, right? I like to say now that I prostituted myself because I like to humble myself before you, because I don't care if you're getting paid $1,000 a night, you know, or whatever. For me, it's like I'm not different than you because I got paid a stupid amount for what I did, you know? Like, it's just not. It's still insane. And I didn't need the money. And so, like, you know, it was just weird. So, anyway, that's some of the craziness. But I think the darker side, right, was for me, at that time I had 4 children, and I don't remember if I was expecting my grandchild yet. But I think that didn't happen until I got sober. But, you know, for all my life, you know, there's been times where I felt depressed or whatnot, and my children, the thought of my children was like, well, I can't leave them. They need me, you know. And I got into such a dark place and such a selfish and self-centered place, because that's really what it was, that I started planning my suicide on 2 occasions. And each time the thought of my children entered my brain and just went right out. And I say that selfish and self-centered because I had gotten to such a low place, you know, of selfishness that I didn't care who I hurt, you know, or what happened. I just needed to solve the problem. You know, I just needed the pain to go away. All I cared about was me, you know. And the thought of my children living a life without their mother didn't bother me anymore. And I think that's when, like, it got super real for me. And I didn't get sober, like, the next day. I wish that was the story, but it was within 2 months, certainly, is when I got sober. And you know, it's like, I want to be like, and then I started researching treatment centers, and then I did this, and then I did that. And that's true. It is true, right? But I didn't really have anything to do with that. Because every single day, like, I woke up and I was like, I don't want to drink. I don't want to do other drinks. And every day, I could not stop myself. I, like, couldn't, you know. I pour the bottle out, and then I just go buy another one. And it was, like, so dumb. And I made attempts, you know. I went through treatment centers and outpatient, and I remember this one outpatient I went through, and I was trying to go to meetings, and, you know, I called the counselor, and I was like, I have a bottle in front of me, and I'm going to drink it. And at that point, like, alcohol had become my pretty much number one substance, along with one other one, and it just worked together so I could, like, stay perfectly effed up all the time. And that was real. I was like, there's a bottle in front of me. I'm going to drink it. And he's like, pour it out and take a picture. So I, like, did, knowing that, you know, as soon as we hang up the phone, like, I'm going to go get another bottle. That's exactly what happened. You know, but so ultimately, like, I can't tell you, you know, why on June 5th I was loaded, and June 6th I was sober, and then I've stayed sober ever since. Like, I couldn't tell you then. I mean, now I can tell you. You know, I was given grace by a power greater than myself that I certainly didn't believe in, and I definitely didn't understand. You know, I grew up in a religious home. Not Catholic, unfortunately. Not that there's anything wrong with that. Sorry. Is this a Catholic church? Okay. Sorry. But I just hear a lot of horror stories. So I didn't have a punishing God, I should say. I grew up in a Jewish home. And, you know, it wasn't like I didn't experience, like, a negativity with Judaism. But I didn't also get to experience, like, and my sponsor always says, I missed the memo. God was all around me and I missed the memo. You know, and that's, like, the best way to say it. My sponsor is, like, the coolest person in the world. If you can get her to speak here, you should get her to speak here. She's way better than me. But she is, like, she's, like, one of the main reasons, you know, that, like, I have a story to share with you tonight. That I have, like, all these peaks and valleys in my sobriety, and I haven't had to take a drink or put any other substance in my body, you know? Like, she's taught me this solution in this book. She's taught it, you know, and she didn't have to, like, hit me over the head with it. Although it's hardcore, you know, in that, like, I'm not going to do the work for you or chase you around and tell you to do the work, you know? I'm going to give you the solution. You know, she's not this hardcore. She's, like, way sweeter about it. But this would be me, you know, if I was her. I'm going to give you the solution that's given me 34 years of sobriety. That's her, not me, obviously. You know, this is me at 34 years. And, like, you can choose to do it or not, you know. Do you want the freedom I found here, you know? And so maybe I'll mellow out after some years here. But, like, it's true, right? You know, I work with a lot of people. I have worked with a lot of people. And, like, I'm happy to meet with you and do this thing if you're doing the work, you know. But I have a really, really, really busy life. I will make time for any sponsee who's like, I'm ready to do the next part. I'm ready to do the next part. I had one sponsee, you know, who I worked with, like, almost every single day over a month, because she was just like, and I'm done with that inventory, and I'm done with that, and I'm done with that. Okay. And she read her fist up. Can we go on? You know, and, like, and then other ones who are like, you know, I'm sure call me their sponsor, you know, but never call me kind of. And so, you know, like, I don't fire anyone. I know I've gone off on a tangent. I don't fire anyone, and I don't expect anyone to fire me, because the truth is, like, if someone else can give you a solution that works better for you, like, dude, I'm so happy for you. You know, like, my sponsor is giving me, like, this solution that's giving me true freedom and serenity, you know, and it's nothing that's not in here. It's all in here. And so, you know, when I got here, I was given the grace, like I said, by that greater power, that I've sort of moved away from calling God, but a lot of people call God in here for the newcomer just because it's easier, you know, than saying spirit of the universe or any of the other hundreds of things, probably not hundreds, but number of things that it's called in the book. And I sort of, like, just held on for dear life, you know. The obsession wasn't removed right away. I went through a treatment center, which obviously isn't AA, but it was, they had AA in there all the time as an AA-based treatment center, which sounds so weird because then they're profiting off of it. But anyways, I guess they brought the other program in there once a week too, but it was mostly AA. And I was just like desperate to get some space between me and the alcohol. And the truth is, like, I wasn't locked down in there. I went in there voluntarily, and I could have left if it just, I had to ask for my keys back, but you know, I could have left. And when I got out of there, I was like very sick still. I'm going to tell you that right now. I didn't start working the steps in there. And my experience has shown that like the solutions in the steps. And I remember, I'm from the Bay Area. I moved down here about 2.5 years ago. And by down here, I mean Fresno. And I was in Napa Valley, which is oddly enough, there's a lot of treatment centers there. And I drove from Napa Valley to my home in San Mateo, which went right through San Francisco, right next to the Tenderloin, where I used to hang out a lot, because clearly I belong in the Tenderloin. And I was like, I mean, I was surprised the car wasn't like that, you know, just from like the jitters that I had. And that's pretty much where I was at for a few months in sobriety, you know. And my I never have enough time to say everything. So many cool things have happened to me since I've been here, you know. And it's all been like this sort of like, go here, check this out, talk to this person. You know, like that's how my sponsor came into my life. And so the treatment center said, like, do these five things and you're going to have a better shot. And I was like, okay, cool. Because if I was anything at that point, I was desperate. You know, I was just desperate. Obsession wasn't removed, but I was like desperate to not go back to the suicidal Karen who didn't care about her kids. I at least had enough, like enough sanity, like a glimmer of hope, right? And life was like really messed up, you know, like the ex-husband had the kids and, like he was sober, but he was still so sick, like really abusive. And thankfully, he's not like that anymore. Or maybe I've changed. I don't know. But he's not emotionally or verbally abusive to me anymore. It was really bad. You know, I was, like, on leave from my job, and I'd been on leave for, like, a long time. And I was, like, worried about my job. I was on leave from grad school, and I was, like, I have to finish because I had one semester left. I felt all this pressure, right? Like, for all these things. And I left there and I was like, I'm going to do the five things, you know. And one of them was like, get a sponsor, go to the meeting your first day out and get a sponsor immediately. And so I did. And like, I asked some lady to be my sponsor, and she was like, I can't, but this lady can. And then I started working with her. And then another friend of mine from high school who'd been sober a few years at that time, and now has like 6 or 7 years, I don't even know. He was like, hey, I used to go to this, I should have taken note of this. I used to go to this like really crazy group called Thumpers. And I should have taken note of this used to. But it actually was the thing that brought me to my sponsor, and she's been my current sponsor. She's been my sponsor since I had like 2 months sober. But I went to that meeting, and they're like the kind of meeting where you walk in, they're like, what step are you on? You know? And then you're like, one. And they're like, why aren't you on step four? And you're like, I don't know. And they're like, you know, because my sponsor has me writing on one. They're like, no, you did one when you walked in the door. And they like broke it down for me. And this other lady started sponsoring me. And then this lady stopped showing up to that meeting, and I couldn't get a hold of her. And that's when Roby, my current sponsor, was like, honey, she's from New Jersey. She's like, honey, I'm going to be a sponsor now, you know. And it was like the best thing. And it was all God, you know. It was all God. And, you know, through that group of crazy alcoholics, I like to call them the alcoholic ICU. It's for the very, very sick people, you know, like me. Like, I was very sick because here I am. I'm well educated, you know, I'm an adult. I have a good job. I have children that I have not broken. You know, I think I have it together. And they're like, you don't know crap because you're a newcomer, you know? So how about you just sit down, you start doing your fourth step, and really figure out, you know, what a screwed up piece of whatever you are. And although I don't take that approach with people, I can tell you that you know, I thought I was a good person when I walked in the door, and I wasn't. And I kind of needed that for someone to tell me that I was a selfish, self-centered person and, like, really beat that into me. And when, they'd say that, I would be, like, appalled. I'd be like, not me, you know? I've never robbed anyone, you know, or whatever. I don't know. I'm sure I've stolen. I've definitely stolen, actually, now that I think about it. But I was, like, appalled, you know, someone was calling me selfish and self-centered. And, like, that was the kind of, I needed that sort of sobriety. And, like, all these things that happened and, you know, happened for a reason. Like, I truly believe that. I met my sponsor there. I learned to really humble myself before people that I didn't think deserved my humility, you know? And eventually we stopped going to that meeting for, like, a variety of reasons because there was some, like, stranger stuff going on. But that group taught me about service. That's one thing that they never skimped on was service. They were like, you say yes to AA. Someone asks you to share, you do it, you know? As soon as you're far enough in your fourth step, you start sponsoring other people and show them what you're doing so far because it keeps you moving and you've already done that part, you know? And they would do, like, insane things like that I joined them on, which, you know, I would never do again. But, like, we took, like, vans of people to Gallup, New Mexico to put on this conference. And the people weren't really super happy that we were there. You know, some of them were. They were like, oh, cool, the Thumpers are here. And other ones who had experienced us the year before were like, oh, you guys are back. That was weird. That was a learning experience. But the people who were grateful, the people, I don't know, it was a really cool experience to just, like, be deep into service. They did a bunch of H&I work, and through that H&I work, like, I got to be involved in what we think is, like, the first AA conference inside a California state prison, maybe even countrywide, I don't really know. There's basically their service work, the Thumper's service work outside, like, inspired somebody inside to put on a conference, and we got to come in and experience it, you know? And so that was, like, my first year. And I immediately got working on my steps, you know? So I finished my first fifth step at 5 months, and my sponsor was like, tick-tock, you're, like, the slowest sponsee I have right now. So if you're, you know, my advice to you is don't wait. I hear a lot of people, when I came down to Central Valley, I was like, you guys don't do AA right. And I still feel that way a lot of times, but I have met some people who I feel like do it right. So if if you want to live up to my standards, then you do. But no, just kidding. Here's the thing. There's so many people I've met who have years and are not done with their fourth step. And I'm like, I would be dead. And maybe I'm just sicker than you, but I would be dead. If I wasn't dead, I'd be freaking miserable. You know, and that's it for me. So I finished I was so desperate that I read my fifth step to my sponsor on the way back from that conference inside the prison with two dudes in the car. Because I was like, she's like, we're going to have like 3 hours and there's going to be other people there. And I was like, I don't care. And truth is, they didn't care. They'd heard it like 100 times. There's nothing spectacular in my story. And by that time the obsession had been removed because my sponsor was like, hey, how about you start praying? You know, that's always my advice to my, I was like doing this whole death grip thing on my life. You know, it was like, I was trying to manage work and I was trying to manage kids and I was trying to manage school and I was this, that, and that, and that. And I got on the phone with her one day and I was like, me, life's so hard. Woe is me. And she's like, where is God in this situation? And, I was so mad at her, you know? And I, like, nicely got off the phone with her because my parents taught me right. And then, because I wanted to say some choice words. And then I started bawling, and I just, like, gave in, you know? I just gave in, and I was like, I just felt that relief, and I started praying. to a God that I didn't understand or know at that time. And the obsession was removed. And all of a sudden, things just, you know, I never understood how you could let go and then things would work out. Like, it just didn't make sense to me. So, I mean, and then, but I'm still supposed to do the footwork. Like, can you please talk my language? Like, what? But that's exactly what I did. I just let go of the outcome, right? Put one foot in front of the other and did everything that was in front of me for the day. And I had a lot in front of me every day. And it was like, it would work out. And, I read that first fifth step, and I moved on and started making amends, and I got really, really angry again. And my sponsor was like, I think you need to do another inventory. At like, I don't know, I had like 9 months, you know, and I was like, are you kidding me? Like, I just got done with that. And that was my second inventory, and I didn't want to do it, but I still had that desperation, and I did it, and I felt such immense relief that I can tell you, she's never had to tell me to do an inventory after that, you know? That was, for me, that was that really bold white light experience, I think. I've had so many mini spiritual experiences here. I don't have time to list them all, but that was like that big one where it like clicked, you know? Like that thing where people say like moves from your head to your heart, you know? It moves from like self-knowledge to like understanding. And, you know, so this always happens. I have like 5 minutes left. I've gone through, in my first, just over a year of sobriety, I lost a friend that was very, very dear to me to cancer, and that was like heart-wrenching, and I didn't drink. I got into this like wonderful relationship in year three and lost it like about a year later, and it was heart-wrenching, and I didn't drink. I did an inventory around it. And I didn't feel relief. And then that's when I realized I needed to do more. My sponsor talks about that a lot, like doing more. You know, you need to do more. The longer you're here, the more you need to do. The old stuff, those are good tools, and I still use them. I still do 10 steps. I still do inventories. But it may not be enough to really, like, give you that spiritual awakening that you need, the, like, the next level, you know? It's kind of like chasing alcohol, but it's instead, or that perfect drunk, but instead it's like chasing spirituality. And, you know, I learned through that experience that I need to do more. You know, I had to throw myself into service. I had to help more people. You know, the book, the chapter 7, Working with Others, we read it. It's all about step 12. It's one entire chapter about working with others. Practical experience shows that nothing so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. You know, when I'm in pain, like, I need to help someone else. That's the number one solution. My grandmother passed away just a few months ago. I didn't drink. She was literally my best friend for the majority of my life. It hit me hard, you know, hard. I've had to like let go of my oldest son, who's one of us and doesn't want this solution, you know, really hard. And like, I've also got to experience like the birth of my grandchild, you know, like I said, a true freedom, you know, another relationship that's like different and special in its own way. I've gotten to experience, like, instead of focusing on like somebody else that can fix me, I've got to experience like how I can be a better friend. I was never a good friend, right? Because I was always like, I need a partner, or whatever. And like during those times where I was like very alone and too broken to get another relationship, but I tried. You know, I got to learn how to be a friend. Yeah, I always tried. I learned a lot through that. I've learned so much being here, and like, frankly, I hope I never stop learning. I can tell you 100% that I have the same amount of desperation as I did when I walked through this door for a little over 4.5 years ago. And I hope that never goes away. And I can tell you for sure that if I was not working my steps, working with others, and being in service, like, I wouldn't have that same level of desperation. You know, I can tell you that for sure because I've been here 2 other times, you know, at this stage. and I feel a lot different. I wish I could say 1,000 more things. I'm just super grateful to be here, and I just want to thank Bill for asking me to share.
Aww.